Please go ahead. This afternoon's conference call is now being recorded.
Thank you very much, Tim. I'll just do a quick roll call. So good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is the GNSA Working Group Newcomer Open House session on the 10th of April, 2014. On the call today, we have Kyodi Yusuf, Klaus Stoll, and Marinelle Roske. From staff, we have Marika Koenigs, Gisela Gruber, and myself, Natalie Peregrine. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Marika.
Thank you very much, Natalie, and hello, everyone. Thank you very much for joining this GNSA Working Group Newcomer Open House session. As we briefly discussed before the start of this meeting, the original host for this session was Mikey O'Connor, who is also one of the initiators of ensuring that there's more support and encouragement for those newcomers to GNSO Working Group efforts. But as he has recently stepped down from iConnectivities, and we haven't been able yet to identify a replacement to support us in hosting these meetings, you're stuck with Natalie and myself for today's session, which I hope you won't mind, and we'll do our best to make you feel at home and hopefully answer any questions you may have. As the title already says, this is really an open house session, and we're here to answer any questions you may have or any topics you would like to talk about. We do have some slides put together here that take you through some of the topics that you may be interested in, such as the PDP or the policy development process, GNSO Working Group guidelines, talking about picket fence. These slides are also available after this call and will be posted, so even if we don't get through these topics, they definitely will be available for you to review at your leisure. So maybe just very briefly as an introduction, in addition, of course, the numerous volunteers that form the GNSO community and participate in GNSO working groups, there's a policy support team that provides support to the activities of the GNSO working groups as well as the GNSO Council in its policy development activities. And so first of all, we have the Vice President for Policy Development, who oversees all the policy development support activities across our team, which is David Olive, who's based in Istanbul, Turkey. Then it's me, Marika Koenigs, my name. I'm a Senior Policy Director and also the team leader for the GNSO team, those people supporting GNSO activities, and I'm based in the ICANN office in Brussels. Glenda Saint-Jury is the GNSO Secretariat, who's based in Cannes in France. Then Mary Wong, who's a Senior Policy Director based in the U.S. Julie Hetland, also Policy Director, also based in Washington, D.C. Lars Hoffman, who's a Policy Analyst based in Brussels, in the Brussels office of ICANN. Barry Cobb, who supports us as a consultant in our activities, also based in the U.S. And Natalie, who's joining me here on this call as well, who also supports the Secretariat operations from her home base in Nice, France. So as a startup, even though it's only Natalie and myself here on this call today, and then I also see that Gisela is there, who also part of her time supports GNSO activities, but also spends a lot of time supporting the at-large advisory committee in their activities. Now, we are all here to help you and assist you in your activities. So if at any point you have any questions or anything that comes up through in between meetings, or if you see us at ICANN meetings, do always feel free to reach out to us and come to talk to us and ask any questions that you may have. So as I said, the goal for this session, it's really flexible. The agenda is completely open. It's really what you all would like to talk about. One of the goals is to maybe share experiences. What have you experienced to date? What are some of the challenges or struggles or questions you may have based on your participation in a working group so far? Are there any pressing questions, any specific topics you would like to hear more about? And then at the end of the presentation, we also have a couple of tips and tricks that may help you find your way around. But before we dive into this, and I'll give you a few minutes as well to think about if there are any specific topics you would like to talk about before I run through some of the other slides, I would like to invite Natalie to maybe, first of all, start a little brief introduction on Adobe Connect. How does Adobe Connect work? I think as many of you will have seen, it's a standard tool we use for most of our activities and the working groups. So it may be good to have a little introduction on how to work with that and play around with it in the next 5 minutes or so. So Natalie, please go ahead.
Thank you, Marika. This is Natalie. So, hello, everyone. This is just a quick overview about the Adobe Connect room. I recognize a few of your names. I see also that A few of you have muted the Adobe Connect Room mic, showing an advanced knowledge of how the Adobe Connect Room works. However, for the others, just a few tips on what's possible as a participant in the Adobe Connect Room. Maybe there are a few things you're slightly unsure of. So the first tip is setting up the audio in the Adobe Connect Room. We always in working groups have an audio bridge set up, so you can dial in your telephone. Equally, we have the Adobe Connect audio set up. What you need to do for this is to simply activate your Adobe Connect Room mic. So to do this, you click on the telephone icon you have at the top toolbar of the Adobe Connect Room and follow the instructions all the way down. You have permissions to accept, etc. Once your activation has been successful, this telephone icon will turn into a microphone icon, meaning that your microphone is activated. The one thing to remember here, as you would do with your telephone, is to mute your microphone to avoid background noises. To do that, you would use the small white arrow to the right of the microphone icon, and there you have the options to mute and unmute your phone. It's very easy to check, as you can see on the attendance list there. If your microphone is muted, you have the red mute bar across it. If you have any issues doing this during a call, you can use the private chat option to ask any of us for assistance, any members of staff. To activate the private chat, you highlight the name of the person you'd like to exchange with, so a member of staff, Gisela, Mariko, or myself, and you have the option in the drop-down menu there to start a private chat. That means that once you've written to us, our chat light will light up, and we'll be able to help you without interfering in the main chat pod. This is equally helpful if, for instance, you need a last-minute bailout or you're having audio issues or other requests. It's a good way to communicate in a private manner. Otherwise, other ways of taking part in the Adobe Connect Room, and this isn't private, it's for everyone to see, is the option certain of you might have seen and a lot of you used, possibly, is the Raise Your Hand button. So that's fairly simple. It's the raise hand icon at the top of the toolbar. So if you click on the white arrow to the right of that, you will have an option to raise your hand and lower your hand. So raise your hand is to put yourself in a question queue or to make a comment, for instance. It's always good to remember to lower your hand afterwards, as otherwise that can be confusing for the chair, who might think you have a follow-up question. Also, in that drop-down menu, lower than the raise hand option, you have other icons, such as the green agree arrow or the red disagree. This can be a good way to respond to a chair's question, for example, regarding your availability for a meeting at a certain date. It's a quick way to do a poll. So if a chair does ask a question, to show approval rather than maybe write it in the chat, where this could be confused with other chat content, is to quickly use this drop-down green button so the chair immediately knows if he's got approval or not. That is basically all I have to say and all there is available for participants in the call. As I said, the only tiny tricky thing here is the audio enabling. If you do have issues with that during calls, we can always arrange a one-to-one test. I'll put our email address in the chat right now for you. I'll do that right away. If you are finding things tricky and would like to test your mics or new headsets, for instance, before a call starts, just email us at that address and we can set up a quick 10-minute trial call beforehand so you're ready and set for the working group meeting. And that's it for me. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much, and back to you, Rika.
Thanks, Natalie. And hearing the echo, maybe also a reminder, indeed, that, of course, don't remember to mute your computer audio if you have your microphone on, as otherwise there is an echo that's being caused. So as Natalie said, we use Adobe Connect for all of our working group sessions. As you see here as well, we usually use the pod to share documents that we're reviewing or discussing. But sometimes we also may use it as a tool to draft certain items or capture notes. So you sometimes see as well that the layout may slightly differ depending on the purpose of the call and how Adobe Connect is being used. So having had that brief introduction into, I think, the more logistical part of how we operate working groups, maybe we can actually dive into some of the other elements of our discussion today. And as I said, you know, please feel free to raise your hand or type in the chat if there are any specific topics you would like to hear more about. As I said, what you see here on the screen as well are those, you know, the standard topics that we have covered in this presentation. I'm happy to move forward to one or the other depending on where your interest lies or where you have specific questions. And if there's no specific topic, I just suggest to run through the slides as we have them. And again, you know, feel free to interrupt me at any time where something is not clear or if you would like some more explanations or if you have any comments or additions you would like to make. I know many of you, I think, are new to this process, but I know Klaus, for example, has already participated in a number of efforts and is also a member of the GNSO Council. So, you know, Klaus, from any point, if there's anything you would like to add or we're leaving out something, feel free to add and join in. So first of all, looking at the GNSO policy development process. So this is really the core or what underpins the way the GNSO develops policy recommendations. We'll briefly come to as well the difference where, you know, we have PDP or policy development working groups and non-PDP working groups. I know several of you are participants in a non-PDP working group. But we first of all focus on actual policy development process working groups. The outset or the objective of these kind of initiatives are recommendations that may result in changes to the contractual requirements of ICANN contracted parties, which are registries and registrars. And in order to be able to come to those recommendations, a set process has been developed and designed to basically reflect the bottom-up consensus-based policy development way in which things are done in ICANN. So there are a number of required steps within that process that need to be followed in order, you know, to meet the requirements that are set out both in the ICANN bylaws as well as in the GNSO operating procedures, where there's a specific section that's called the PDP manual that describes in great detail all the steps that need to be followed in a policy development process. And maybe worth noting as well that even for those initiatives that are not policy development processes, to a large extent they will follow, you know, the big steps of this procedure, as it does provide a good way of, you know, checks and balances and making sure that there is sufficient community consultation and input throughout the process. So this graphic provides a you know, big high-level picture of the PDP process. I think sometimes people refer to it as well as the snake. On the website, we actually have a more detailed breakdown of each of these steps as well. We detail graphics, but I think it probably would take us too much time to go in that much depth. But I just want to note that if you're interested to really dive into the details, you're encouraged to, you know, look at those graphics in combination with, you know, reviewing the bylaws as well as the PDP manual. So basically, at the start of a process, there's always, you know, someone raises an issue. There's something that has been identified that needs to be addressed or that needs to be worked on. So at that stage, a request for an issue report is launched. That can either be done through requests from a GNSO Council member, a request from the board, or a request from an advisory committee. Once that request has been received or in certain cases adopted, basically the staff then is tasked to write what we call an issue report. We start off with a preliminary issue report in which the objective is really to scope the issue. What is the issue actually about? What data or information do we have available that identifies what the problems are? And, you know, have there been any research been done? Are there any positions known on the specific topic? Is it considered within scope of the GNSO to address? And are there any further considerations that need to be taken into account in order for the GNSO Council to decide on whether or not to initiate a policy development process on that? That preliminary issue report is put out for public comment to really make sure that everyone has an opportunity to review the information that we've been able to gather and be able to identify whether we, you know, did we overlook something, did we miss something, did we misstate something, and also express an opinion on whether or not a PDP should be initiated on the topic or not. Based on that feedback received through the public comment forum, staff will then produce a final report, which is then submitted to the GNSO Council for its consideration and a vote on whether or not to move forward with a PDP or not. Just a little caveat there that in the case of board-initiated policy development processes, there actually is no GNSO Council intermediate vote, but it goes straight into the policy development process. Then it basically moves into the phase where you all come in. After the council initiates officially initiates the policy development process, the next step is the development of a charter. And typically a drafting team is formed for that effort, in which basically the scope of the effort is outlined, which is typically to a large extent based on what is in the issue report, and really outlines what are the specific questions the PDP is expected to address and provide recommendations on. Once a charter then is adopted, a working group is formed. And as you, I think, all know, GNSO working groups are open to anyone interested to participate in. The only requirement there is to complete a statement of interest, which basically outlines what is your affiliation, do you have any specific interests that people at least should be aware of. We don't operate on the basis that if you have an interest, you're not allowed to participate. It's actually the opposite. It's more about the transparency and accountability, so people know at the outset whether you have a specific stake or interest in the outcome of the process, so that's clear as the deliberations go on. Very important as well at the start of a working group is outreach to other interested parties, such as other GNSO stakeholder groups and constituencies, as well as ICANN supporting organizations and advisory committees, really in an effort to try to gather as much information and opinions as possible at the start of the process. And I think, as you know, many of you have joined working groups that have just gotten started. So that is typically one of the first steps that a working group will start focusing on, in addition to making sure that everyone's aware and briefed on what the actual issue is and all the information available, starting to reach out to the broader community to make sure that all the information is available as the working group starts its deliberations. So based on the input received, further discussions, in certain cases it may also involve participation of experts or additional research or data gathering. At a certain point in time, the working group believes it's at a stage where it's ready to share its initial findings and initial recommendations with the broader community, and at that point, an initial report is published for public comment. Again, usually in accompaniment with the publication, there is either a webinar or public sessions at ICANN meeting, again, really intended to make sure that as broad community as possible can look at the proposed recommendations and provide input on whether or not these recommendations are indeed addressing the issue, the problem identified, whether there are any issues that have been overlooked, whether there are any further issues that need to be considered as part of the working group's report. So based on the feedback, the working group then will go back to its work and take all that input into account. They also have an obligation to respond to those comments or at least demonstrate how they have been considered and what was done with those. And based on that, the working group then will eventually produce a final report. And that final report is then submitted to the GNSO Council, who deliberates on the recommendations. GNSO Council also serves as the manager of the policy development process, so one of their responsibilities at that stage is to make sure that the process was followed, that were no process lapses, all the steps were met as required, and it will deliberate on the recommendations and decide on whether or not to adopt these. There's also an option for the council if they believe that certain things were overlooked or the process was not followed to actually give it back to the working group for further consideration. Following the adoption by the GNSO Council, the recommendations are again put out for public comment prior to board consideration, again as an opportunity for the board to appreciate whether there are any further input that wasn't considered or any considerations they need to be taking into account as they consider the recommendations. And once that has happened, all the information is submitted to the ICANN board, and presuming they adopt the recommendation, it then goes into implementation, which is directed towards staff who typically works with implementation review teams, which consist of community members, on developing the actual implementation plan, which in due time is then also put out for public comment and input, following which the policy is then finally implemented at a certain date. So again, this is at a very high level the way policy development works within the GNSO. As said, there's a lot of flexibility in the process. There are many ways in which working groups, for example, can organize workshops, reach out for public comment, have further conversations with experts. But there are a couple of minimum requirements that do need to be fulfilled. As said, one of them is reaching out to GNSO constituencies and stakeholder groups to ask for their input. And most of them typically will submit formal statements and expressing their views on the topic or sharing information or data that will help the working group in its deliberations. Working groups are also required to formally seek the opinion of other ICANN advisory committees and supporting organizations early on in the process. And again, I think that's as well a recognition that it's very helpful to have those views expressed at an early stage in the process instead at the end game where recommendations may have already been formed and it's much harder at that stage to make any changes. So again, I think it's a real encouragement to everyone involved to provide information and feedback at an early stage so that it can all be considered and addressed by the working group. The development of initial report and public comment on that is a requirement. Again, should a working group decide to have different iterations of a report, they can do so. Should they decide to have more public comment forums on certain questions or certain documents, they can do that. Another requirement, as I mentioned before, is reviewing comments. I think it's as well a recognition that many people spend a lot of time in actually developing positions or providing comments. So working groups take that very seriously and really go through the comments one by one, trying to address or respond to those comments and also indicate whether or not they've actually made changes based on those comments. In certain cases, comments may be endorsements of certain positions, so there's no need to make changes. But in a lot of cases, specific changes may be suggested, and depending on whether the working group has already considered the issue or agrees or disagrees with that position, they may make changes as a result of that. And then again, the final report, of course, is one of the other requirements. So if you really want to have more details on the PDP and all the different steps and the nuances in that, Annex A of the ICANN bylaws outlines the GNSO policy development process at a more higher level. The details of those are then further incorporated in the PDP manual, which is part of the GNSO operating procedures. And as I said, there are some additional graphics that we've provided that provide more detail on each of the steps that you just saw at a high level in the snake as such, which you can find on the link that's the PDP overview on the GNSO website. Let me pause here a second to see if there are any questions on this specific topic. Seeing no hands, moving on then to the topic of consensus policy and the picket fence. I think these may be terms that you've heard before in conversations talking about the GNSO. And as I mentioned before, the PDP is required to be used in those cases where policy recommendations are developed that are intended to result in changes to the contract that ICANN has with its contracted parties. And that is what we call consensus policy. So there's a specific requirement for consensus policies to go through a PDP. For other recommendations, a PDP may be used, but it's not a requirement. However, if the desired outcome is a consensus policy, a PDP is a requirement in order for that to be a binding on contracted parties. So as I mentioned before, ICANN-accredited registrars and registries are linked to ICANN through contracts that we have with each other, and you can find the agreements there. Within those contracts, there's a specific section that talks about consensus policy. It's a certain number of topics on which ICANN can develop policies through the PDP that in turn can be binding on registries and registrars, provided they have followed the process. It's quite a unique situation, and I think if you talk to contracted parties, they often refer to this, because of course it's quite unique that they sign a contract with ICANN that has a provision in there that says, there may be new requirements on you, but we cannot tell you yet what those may be. You'll only find out later. So that's a bit of a unique situation, and that's as well why the PDP as such is a very specific process and specific requirement to get to that stage, as it has a big impact, of course, on contracted parties. As I'm here in the footnote as well, in order to understand the specific limitations and topics on which these consensus policies can or may apply, you should refer to the bylaws as well as the contractual agreements that have further details on those topics. I think this is what I basically briefly explained, and here you see some examples of what those policies may refer to, such as issues for which uniform or coordinated resolution is reasonably necessary to facilitate interoperability, technical stability, and or stable operation of the internet or domain name system. A registry or registrar policies are reasonably necessary to implement consensus policies and resolution of disputes regarding the registration of domain names. And you can think, for example, about the UDRP, which is a consensus policy. And again, you know, the detailed topics you can find in the actual registry and registrar agreements that outline which topics would qualify for consensus policy development. So it's important to note as well that, of course, certain topics do not fall under that category. So there are certain topics where it is not possible to actually develop contractually binding consensus policies through this process. So then maybe briefly mentioning as well, because I think it's another term that in this context is often used, which is called, you know, picket fence. And I think it's a term that, you know, to many may sound confusing, but basically what it is intended to mean is really the general policymaking authority that has been granted to ICANN to preserve the stability and security of the DNS, and the policy authority that is described in the previous slide that creates basically a picket fence around ICANN's authority, and as well specifically limited to those specific topics that consensus policy can be developed on. And Klaus, I see your hand up. Let me just cover the second bullet on this one. So as I mentioned before, so through, you know, GNSO policy development or other activities, there are still mechanisms to establish policy recommendations or best practices that may affect issues outside the picket fence, outside those specific topics that are listed in the ICANN agreement. But there's no mechanism to mandate those policies or require compliance from registries and registrars as a consensus policy as such. There may be other mechanisms by which ICANN could encourage or promote adoption, but we could not necessarily mandate it, as is the case when we would be talking about a consensus policy as such. Klaus, please go ahead.
Yeah, Natalie, thank you very much. That's very straightforward and clear. But maybe it would be more helpful if you could give actually some examples for what's inside the consensus policy, what can be included, what can't be included. Because I think the biggest problem there is that there is, on the one side, there are some clear markers. On the other hand, it's not clear what's inside and outside. And I think one of the big discussion always in a PDP, is it inside, is it outside, what goes under consensus and what doesn't go under consensus. So it might be helpful if you would be able to give some concrete topics or examples of what's inside and what's outside.
Sure. So this is Marika again. So I do have to say that there is a slight difference between what is in registry agreements and in registrar agreements, because, of course, both of those parties have different functions within the ICANN ecosystem, but there are also some overlaps. But, you know, looking, for example, at the what is currently in the 2013 RAA, you know, it talks about things that you know, consensus policies shall relate to one of the following: registrar policies reasonably necessary to implement consensus policies relating to a GTLD registry, resolution of disputes regarding the registration of domain names as opposed to the use of such domain names. So, I mean, most of the categories are relatively broad, and I think Klaus has already referred to, in certain cases, these are, you know, open for interpretation or discussion. But I think within those, to give you some concrete examples, you know, existing consensus policies, for example, are the inter-registrar transfer policy. So basically that relates to how domain names are transferred from one domain name registrar to another. For example, the post-expiration domain name recovery that talks about you know, what are the requirements for registrars to notify registrants when their domain name is about to expire. You know, some of the other topics that are specifically identified are, you know, principles for allocation of registered names in a TLD. So, you know, renewal, the holding period, expiration. It also mentions, for example, that, you know, it could include prohibitions on warehousing or speculation in domain names by registries or registrars. But that is, for example, a topic that we haven't had any policy development on, or there is currently no consensus policy that addresses that specific issue. maintenance of and access to accurate and up-to-date information concerning registered names and name servers. That, for example, covers who is and who is policies that are related to it. Transfer registration data upon a change in registrar sponsoring one or more registered names. And again, that's the inter-registrar transfer policy. So I think in most, if you look at the topics, they're quite specific, but of course it doesn't necessarily prescribe how such a consensus policy may look. It just talks about which are the general topics that are eligible for consensus policy development. It may be worth noting as well that it does also indicate which topics are not, or specific topics that are not eligible for consensus policy development, such as prescribing or limiting the price of registrar services, modifying the limitations on temporary policies, or modifying the provisions in the RAA regarding terms or conditions for the renewal, termination, or amendment of the RAA or fees paid by registrar to ICANN. So it also includes certain topics that are very specifically excluded from consensus policy development. But as I referred to before, for example, there are certain areas where, depending on who you ask, there may be a different interpretation of what that means. And I can give you one example where I think we did stumble across that issue in relation to resolution of disputes regarding the registration of domain names, where in a working group, I think a couple of years back, actually, we had extensive discussion on what does registration of domain names mean. Does that mean the act of registering the domain name, or the registration of the domain name actually means the whole term during which a registration is held? So again, I think it's really interpreting of words, which of course would affect as well potential outcomes. So that's why throughout a policy development process, certain questions of scope and enforceability may come up. Because again, one of the important reasons why it's important to make sure that indeed it's within the scope of the picket fence is that if it's not, if you come out at the end of the day, it may be that a policy recommendation would not be enforceable as it does not fill within that authority that has been granted to ICANN to enact on those consensus policies. And things where a lot of lawyers probably get involved if that happens. But I think in most of the instances, it is pretty straightforward, and some of the topics are very specific. So I don't think we had any recent instances where there was big disagreement on whether or not something was suitable for consensus policy development or not. Does that answer your question, Klaus?
Yes, thank you very much. I think it's really helpful to see on concrete example what's in and what's out, especially because we always like to look at policy PDPs at things to get our special interests and done some decision on, but then we find out it's actually absolutely not in the PDP remit. So it's better to be clear right from the start what's in and what's out. But thank you very much, man.
Yeah, and thanks, guys. And that's a very important point. And I think as well, that's one of the elements you didn't maybe see on the snake, but really before actually diving into an issue, and then it's a conversation we're trying to have as well at the council level, is indeed to determine, do you really need a PDP to address the topic? Because there are other ways in which, the council can undertake or the GNSO can undertake work on certain topics without, having the requirement to go through all the steps of the policy development process. Indeed, if you already know at the outset that your outcome is not intended to be a consensus policy. And a very concrete example here is, and I think several of you on the call today are members of the data and metrics for policymaking working group. That is one of the initiatives, for example, where it is recognized that it's a really important topic, because having data at the start, at the outset of policy development processes or non-policy development processes, as well as metrics to actually measure the success or lack thereof of policies that have been developed, is really crucial in these activities. However, that doesn't necessarily require any contractual changes to registries or registrar agreements or any kind of enforcements from ICANN's side. Hence, the non-PDP nature of that working group. And as you may see on the GNSO activity list, there are quite a number of non-PDP working groups that are active and operating, again, really focusing on issues that have either no relationship whatsoever with the contracts that ICANN has with contracted parties, you know, for example, looking at improvements to the PDP or, you know, the GNSO review. Those are really topics that have no relationship whatsoever with the agreements that ICANN has. And, you know, and there are numerous other topics that do specifically relate to the contracts that ICANN has, and those are then done in the form of a policy development process, such as the work that's ongoing on the inter-registrar transfer policy, for example. There's a working group looking at translation and transliteration of contact information, specifically relating to who is as well. And then we're looking as well at, you know, privacy and proxy services accreditation, you know, again, another policy development process that is ongoing. So moving on, if you want to know more about consensus policy, we do have as well a specific website with more information, and I think there's also a presentation that was provided by Margie Milam a while back that goes even into more specificity in relation to indeed which topics are in the picket fence and which ones are outside. And I probably should have prefaced this all with saying I'm not a lawyer, so don't hold me liable to anything I've said in this presentation. But again, you know, have a look at that, and I think there's more detail there if you're interested in this specific topic. Then maybe very briefly looking at the GNSO Working Group guidelines, and I'm aware that we're running out of time, so I think I'll just go very briefly through this. In addition to the PDP manual, which basically prescribes how a policy development process is supposed to be run and which are the required elements of that process, part of the operating procedures consists also of the GNSO Working Group guidelines. So that basically is a kind of manual for how working groups are expected to operate and function. So I think it's something that, you know, at the start of every working group, a brief introduction to those working group guidelines is provided, and, you know, links, you're all encouraged, of course, to review those documents and materials as well before you start participating in a working group. So, and as I said, you know, it's really to assist working groups to optimize productivity and effectiveness. To give you an idea of what is covered in there, it talks about, you know, how should the first meeting of a working group be run, and what are the typical working group roles and responsibilities. I think it provides some more detail as well. For example, you know, what is a chair expected to do? What could be the roles of the vice chairs? What are the responsibilities of working group members? And, you know, what is the role that staff plays in a working group? It talks about how you may want to use subteams, briefings, and subject matter experts. It talks about participation and representativeness. It's very important as well that, of course, there's active participation and broad representation in a working group, and that it's not skewed, you know, to one group or another. It talks about process integrity, behavior, and norms. I think one of the most important elements, probably, and that is also very relevant to PDP working groups, is the standard methodology for making decisions. And it really talks about how the different level of consensus are assessed in a working group process and what the role of the chair is in that. Also, how can you challenge if you believe, you know, your views are being misrepresented, or if the chair is not doing his job, you know, what are the appeal processes that working group members have should they feel that, you know, decisions are not taken in a neutral manner or certain views are not being respected. And it talks as well about, you know, what are some of the communication and collaboration tools working group use and the typical products and output of working groups. I said, I think this is, you know, the standard methodology for decision making is, you know, one of the very important elements of that. The chair plays a very important role in that. It's a very iterative process determining the level of consensus. Basically, I think at a certain stage in the working group process, there's a realization that either, you know, they've come to the end and there's broad agreement on what the recommendations should be, or it's clear that there's not going to be any agreement and an assessment needs to be made on where the support level lies. And again, you know, the chair plays a very important role in that and making sure that everyone feels involved and agrees with the assessments that are being made. So the current designations that that we have is full consensus. Basically, everyone agrees. Consensus where everyone most agree, but only a small minority may disagree. A support, but significant opposition, where it's really more a split view. Divergence, where there basically is no agreement, and as well a minority view where a certain group or individual want to express a specific position and have that included in the working group report for reference. Again, if you want to read up on the Judicial Working Group guidelines, there's a summary available, as well as the full document, which can be found in the link you see here. So very briefly, as we're running towards the end of our call, some tips and tricks. So, you know, finding your way around, I mean, there are a lot of materials available. I think I've already rattled off a number of links through the service and different documents. But, you know, your first starting point for anything GNSO-related is, of course, the GNSO website, which you can find at gnso.icann.org. It's hopefully organized in such a way that it makes it easy for you to find your way around and find information on recent projects as well, past projects, as well as, you know, the operating procedures, as well as links to, you know, correspondence and draft materials. As mentioned before, you know, review of the core materials, I think, is really crucial as you start working in the GNSO. Make sure that you're familiar with the operating procedures as well as the working group guidelines and the PDP manual. I know from the staff side, we really try to do our best as well at the start of a working group to take people through that. But it's a lot of material, so but it's very important so everyone has, you know, starts at the same level of understanding of what is required and what is supposed to happen. As Klaus pointed out as well, most important trick, talk with the veterans. You know, I think in every working group you'll see as well, as I said, you know, staff is always available to answer questions or you know, provide further information. But do feel free as well to reach out to your co-working group members, you know, either within your constituency or group, or where you see that, you know, certain members have been around for a long time. And I know as well many of them are very happy to talk with you about their experiences and provide you with their hints and tips on how to you know, survive a GNSO working group. We also have a lot of like basic introduction materials, the GNSO 101 materials that you can find on the website that talk about, you know, what is the role of a council member, what is a working group, and really try to, you know, take you through some of the basics. And to give you an idea of other topics that the GNSO works on, you know, have a look at the GNSO project list. If you're interested, for example, in joining other efforts, that's a good, provides you a good overview of what topics we're looking at and as well what stage of the process these activities are. I think I haven't been too bad today in using too many acronyms, but I think most of you will know as well that ICANN consists mainly of acronyms. There's an acronym helper that you can find on the GNSO homepage. So if you have any questions or doubts on what an acronym may mean, you can go there. But also, you know, feel free in any discussion to either raise your hand or just type in the chat, you know, what does that mean? I think we're all very aware that, you know, we have a lot of newcomers coming in and we may be throwing out terms that are obvious to everyone but may not be so obvious to someone who is just new. So please feel free at any point to either raise your hand, you know, type it in a chat, or, you know, send us a private chat if you don't feel comfortable asking it in the full working group discussion. You know, just drop us a private note and say, you know, what does that mean, IRTP? Or where can I find more information? ICANN Learn, which is a new initiative which provides training materials and tries to, home to many presentations that we've already provided, and also provides the opportunity for community members to develop trainings that where they believe more information is needed or helpful. And we're really hoping as well that we'll get more GNSO-specific training materials there, and it's one of the arrows we'll be looking at over the next couple of weeks and months to make sure as well that when newcomers come in addition to, you know, for example, these newcomer sessions, we can actually point people to a page where, you know, we believe certain training materials are available that, you know, may be helpful in getting to know the organization and finding your place, basically. And I think, yeah, coming back to Klaus's point before, you know, find an experienced working group member, even or from your stakeholder group or constituency, and to provide guidance or answer questions. I think a lot of stakeholder groups and constituencies are also very active in trying to make sure that newcomers, you know, find their way and are get familiar with you know, what it takes to work in working group member in working groups in the GNSO. And I said, you know, contact the GNSO policy staff. We're really here at your disposal. We're covering many different time zones, so I think there's always someone awake that will be able to help you with your questions. We know that, you know, coming into certain working groups, especially when there are a lot of old-timers already in there, may for some people sometimes feel that they're, you know, just stepped on board a Formula One car that's going way ahead while, you know, you're still trying to you know, get in touch with what is actually all about. So We know it can sometimes be very daunting, and we really hope that we can just be here and serve as well as a bit of a support for you to make sure that, you know, you do find your way around, and sooner rather than later, you'll also be one of those old-timers that will be helping, hopefully, others that join these efforts and feeling at home and finding their way around and you know, talking to the right people and reading the right materials. So I think that's all I have for you today. I'm happy to take any questions, or if there are any other topics you think we should be including for future sessions. As I said, you know, we're running these newcomer open house sessions on a monthly basis. So if you feel that, you know, between now and next month there are some specific questions, or you just would like to have a chat, because I know I've been doing a lot of the talking today, but, you know, if you say, look, I've seen these slides already, I prefer now just to, you know, hear Klaus talk about his experience or have Sintra talk about her experience in the working groups, that's something we can definitely do as well. As I said, these calls are really intended for you as a community to, you know, direct those as you think best fit. And with that, I'd just like to open the floor and see if you have any questions or suggestions. Olivier, please go ahead.
Yes. Hi, everyone. It's Olivier Tapin-Leblanc speaking. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Excellent. I've just turned on, just connected my mic. Okay, just a question on the session itself. These are GNSO welcome sessions. Are these available for everyone to participate in? Because I was thinking of sending a few of our people in at large over to the session. I very much enjoyed it, and I learned a few more things about the GNSO, and I think it's important now that the GNSO is opening many of its working groups to have non-GNSO members specific people, you know, to join some GNSO working groups. I noticed there have been a lot of calls, and unfortunately there's been very little response within our ranks and at large, because people are not quite aware of how the GNSO works. I would have thought this is really helpful for them. Is this welcome GNSO welcome webinar open for everyone?
Yes, definitely. I mean, the main objective of this is really to try, you know, new members to working groups, to make them feel at home and make them familiar with you know, some of the procedural aspects. But, you know, anyone that wants to learn about the GNSO and just hear what we do, because I think, you know, part of the objective is as well so people actually understand what it may take to volunteer for a working group. So we really want to make sure as well that people, when they volunteer their time, even as a working group member or as a chair, they get a better appreciation of what it may entail and what is required. But, you know, the more we can brief as well on what the GNSO does, you know, the more the merrier. So, yes, definitely open to anyone interested. And just to note as well, like as you said, you know, I think already for the last couple of years, most of the GNSO efforts are open to anyone interested to participate. And again, you know, if there's anything you can do as well to help us reach out to broader communities and groups to make sure people understand that and are aware that, you know, anyone can join us, that will be more than helpful. Klaus?
Yes, thank you. I think what we should do, or try should do, I think the key question of people, yes, everything is open and everybody is welcome, but we also should try to make it as relevant to everybody who we want to join. So maybe format change, that we do half of the session on slides and then formalities like Sintra just mentioned, and half the session of people can ask questions or say something and the open discussion on things and their experiences in the working groups. Because I think listening to all that stuff and reading all that stuff is really daunting. Some people might think, I mean, that's really not for me. But sharing the experiences of people who are in the working groups or want to go to the working groups or have something in mind makes it much more attractive and much more lively and interesting for people. So as a format change, I would say let's half it in half an hour presentation and half an hour open discussion.
Thanks, guys. I think that's a really good suggestion. You know, as I said, you know, we scrambled a little bit for this one because I think, you know, Mikey in the past has been kind of following or fulfilling that role of, you know, the experienced working group member. But I think looking ahead, you know, Natalie and I can maybe think about how we can at least reduce the core of the presentation in each of the half hour, and then see if we can encourage some of the existing working group members and chairs or council members, so we have a kind of rotation where people actually attend the call and are able then indeed for the second half hour to lead the discussion and have a bit more open Q&A, because I think that's a really good idea. So I think Natalie and I will work on that, and hopefully you'll be willing to be one of those volunteers to run a Q&A as part of these meetings. And to Cintra's point, I think what may be helpful, because I think she's asking about how procedural and operating documents, ICANN bylaws and GMSO operating procedures actually link with charters of constituencies and stakeholder groups. So maybe for that, it may be helpful to include, I think, the GMSO structure slide that we have with the houses, and basically explains indeed that you have the council, which is the manager of the policy development process, and to which the operating procedures applies in the PDP manual and working group guidelines. But underneath that, of course, you have different structures that each have as well their own charters and operating procedures, and some of their requirements do flow from the GMSO operating procedures as well, but that there's indeed more structure to it than just the GMSO council. So maybe including that slide will be helpful to demonstrate that. And Klaus, is that a new hand or is an old hand?
That's an old one and a new one. Yes, if I'm getting volunteered, I'm ready to help. And I threaten to tell you start the sessions with anecdotes and stories from my working group life, which is sometimes hilarious, but sometimes also very depressing.
As long as you don't scare anyone away, I would say. But thank you for volunteering. And as I said, and Matthew and I will work on reformatting, I think, the slides, and we can have some of the core slides and put, I think, the rest in the annex, so indeed we make sure that we leave half an hour for discussion. And still, if people want to come back to certain topics, we can do that as well. If there are no further questions, I think I would just like to thank you all for your participation. I said, if you have any further questions, either immediately after this call or over the next couple of weeks, we're running these calls on a monthly basis, so feel free to join the next session again if you have any further questions or need to hear some of these things one more time, because I know it's a lot of information we've provided today. In the meantime, feel free to reach out to any of us, and we'll do our best to point you in the right direction. So with that, thank you all for participating, and hope to see you soon at the next GMSO working group or a newcomer session. Thank you all.